Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today on Studio Tulsa, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates vying to be Tulsa's next mayor. Yesterday, we heard from challenger Kathy Taylor, and today, my guest is the incumbent mayor, Dewey Bartlett. Bartlett was elected the 39th mayor of the city of Tulsa in the fall of 2009. He's in the energy business and is the president of his family's oil and gas business, and he previously served as a District 9 councilman when the city first converted to a mayor-council form of government and served in the first two terms of the city council from 1990 to 1994. I spoke with Mayor Bartlett back in mid-October, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Dewey Bartlett, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me here once again.
This long campaign, and this is, our mayoral campaign is getting to be almost as long as a presidential campaign. It seems like it's been a very long campaign, but nonetheless, it will be coming to an end shortly on November 12th. First of all, before we get into various issues, I'd just like to ask you, what do you think your biggest accomplishment has been over the last 4 years?
Well, I think it's certainly restoring financial integrity to the city of Tulsa government. We were in a very, very bad place. Literally my first day in office, we found out that our emergency reserve fund had been depleted from roughly $13 million down to about $2 million. We had no money in our rainy day fund, and we were spending more money that was coming in. As a result of all that, we had to cut $10 million out of our budget in order to get through the rest of our then fiscal year. And that was difficult because this was December, and our fiscal year ends in June, and we had to have a few months lead time to make these changes. And we were able to do it. It wasn't easy. A lot of decisions had to be made and orders given, etc. But we did make it work. But we also focus on the long term, because I didn't want to see the city of Tulsa have to go through that kind of a process again. So we were able to engage the good offices of the KPMG company, and through a very generous grant from the Tulsa Community Foundation, they very quickly engaged on a top-to-bottom evaluation of our city government, each department, and make recommendations on how we could save money, what priorities we needed to establish, what mistakes we were making, what we could get rid of, what we did not need to do, where duplicative efforts and work were being done, and ways that we could possibly make money as well. So we were given a report after several months of 1,100 recommendations, and we began implementing them. To date, the ones that we have implemented will be giving us a savings of at least $25 million over a five-year period of time. So that became, in my view, a real poster child view of how a city can reinvent itself into becoming relevant and not using the usual, well, let's just go tax the public a little more to make the budget work this year. I was very committed to the concept that we could manage our way out of the problem, and we did. That's exactly what we did.
What was the toughest decision you had to make in that seven-month period as far as cutting things in the middle of the fiscal year to be sure that you end the year with a balanced budget?
Far and away, it was asking the employees to agree to cuts, temporary cuts in their salaries and in their benefits. And that resulted in most of the departments, the unions essentially, of agreeing to that, grudgingly so, which I certainly understand that. But the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police Union, decided not to accept anything. And that was unfortunate because when that they had a vote, overwhelmingly decided to reject whatever ideas we had, and they didn't come up with any of their own ideas other than they just didn't want to do it. So the next day I had to lay 125 police officers off. And that was a tough day, very tough day.
You mentioned the KPMG audit, and what recommendation that hasn't been implemented yet that you'd like to see? Is there any out there that you'd like to see?
Well, one that hasn't been implemented yet, but they're in the process of doing, involves our water and sewer department. The Tulsa Municipal Utility Authority that oversees the financing and operation of our utility departments, water and sewer, as well as portions of stormwater, but generally water and sewer. It's such a massive department, and they do so many things and provide an obvious core service to our city, providing the drinking water, safe clean drinking water, but also taking away the sewage and dealing with that in a responsible way.
And flood mitigation.
Absolutely. Stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
Flood mitigation is something that we used to really fear every spring, but now it's not a problem like it used to be. But the utility authority decided, with our recommendation and the KPMG's study's recommendation, they decided to do a very thorough study of the water and sewer departments and how they manage the system, and they engaged another company to do that. And that process is still ongoing. It's just about finished. But it's going to be very, very thorough. It's going to provide recommendations that will supply us good, safe drinking water for the next many, many decades, if not the next century. That is something that I feel that once it's finally completed and implemented, the public will be well served. Because one thing we always say is, in Tulsa, we've got access to water. We don't have to worry about droughts necessarily. Because we have so much water available to us all the time, both for ourselves as personally, as our families, but also for our businesses. And that's a terrific asset we have that many other cities don't have. But by us keeping ahead of whatever demands our system is going to need over the next several decades, it's just smart business for us to do that, and that's what's being done.
Well, as you well know, that is one of the areas where the cost to citizens is growing, well, water rates and sewer rates. Do you anticipate that these recommendations, if they're implemented, will realize reductions in the cost of water for the average citizen, or will it be more of a cost savings to the city?
I think it'll be a cost savings, because when we defer maintenance and improvement of our capital structure, in other words, if we defer maintaining properly and replacing our water lines, for example, eventually things will break and we'll have some serious breaks, and that gets very expensive. We have a water delivery system from Lake Spavinaw, that area, and Lake Uchi. And it's through some very, very large concrete-lined pipes that have been in place since, I think, the 30s.
So you're looking at this as a way to improve the infrastructure, then?
Absolutely.
And take the savings out of this restructuring to apply it to infrastructure.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay. So whatever we can do to utilize those savings in a long-term way, then I think that's smart. We certainly don't want to use it to hire a whole bunch of new people. I think we're well-served now with the people we have. In some cases, we're a little thin. But if we can get those savings and plow it back into the infrastructure of the water and the sewer department, then that just makes, in my view, makes a good business sense and a good business story.
Earlier you were speaking about when you took office, revenue was cratering. And of course, that was 2009. Really, the effects hit Oklahoma late.
Mm-hmm.
But about the time you were hitting office, the effects of the 2008 crash was hitting in here in Oklahoma. We're in a similar situation. At least revenue seems to be falling behind projections. Revenue seems to be falling a little bit. It's not nearly to the same case.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the things you've done in this term will be able to prevent any sort of reduction in city services or reduction in compensation to city employees and their families or layoffs or anything like that? Do you feel like what you've done will prevent that from happening?
Certainly we're better prepared for it. Now, whether or not it'll prevent it, don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I do believe that we're certainly much better prepared for that eventuality. For one thing, we have in our rainy day fund now $2 million. Didn't have that before. Our emergency reserve fund, we now have $16 million. And we're putting together a policy that we can have an even greater emergency reserve fund, which is what I think is a smart thing for us to do. So we're in better shape financially. We also have a better, more efficient group of employees. And we've been able to privatize some of the things that we do. And that's saving us money. We're not spending quite as much money in some areas as we were before. We've also done a better job of buying things that are more efficient. For example, our transit system. We're in a process now of replacing all of our diesel-powered buses with CNG-powered. And even though we're about halfway through that process now, last year it saved us more than $400,000. So we spent $400,000 less for fuel than we had the previous year, even though the prices of diesel fuel about the same. So by saving that amount of money, we're able to provide better service and more things and all that. The transition we had of the way we pick up our trash, we required that all of the trash trucks be powered by CNG. And that saves. It's amazing the savings that compressed natural gas-powered vehicles save versus the cost of diesel fuel. Each one of those trash trucks is now using in excess of $800 less fuel. So if you count that over a year's period of time, that's a significant amount of money, about $10, $11 million. Probably. Got a little ahead of myself there. Wish it would have been that much, but that's a little much. But that figure then is almost a guarantee of keeping rates low, stabilizing rates. And obviously in a recession or a down economy, not increasing rates and even the possibility of reducing rates is a very, very good position to be in. And that's where we are right now.
You mentioned trash policy. I was going to ask about that. I want to ask what you consider the biggest challenge, but let's talk about trash first. And that is, I know it's been a troubled start to this new process. Mm-hmm. The green waste now is, I guess, being treated like other trash. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that going to be for the foreseeable future, or are we going to really try to really build a true, strong recycling green waste program along with the recycling program?
Well, the good news of that is that we do have a very, very strong recycling program now. It's many times more successful than the previous efforts. And there's no extra fee involved in our recycling. And as we all know, it's don't have to sort everything out and put it in different bins and all that. Put it in one big container and adios.
Now I have a question about the recyclables, because, you know, there are different levels of plastics, and mm-hmm. I know we're actively recycling a couple of them, I think ones and twos, but they're actually collecting other types of recyclables. Are those being held? Are they being disposed of? What exactly?
They're being held as the appropriate machinery is put in place by the contractor that we sell all of the recyclables to, then they will be recycling even more. So they're just beginning this process as well. And it's working very, very well, better than anticipated. That whole recycling effort is really done well, and we get money for it.
Yeah. Now, the green waste has not worked so well.
Well, the green waste, what happened, several things happened there. I think we got a little too ambitious in trying to do too many things at the same time that we were having a wholesale change in how we do pick up our trash. When it became very apparent that what the public was doing, that they were getting their green waste and simply putting it inside the cart that the rest of the trash was. There was an anticipated amount of green waste that would be made available for recycling purposes, and that was never even come close to reaching. People were simply getting their lawn.
They were trying to avoid that 50-cent sticker.
Exactly. And yeah. The 50-cent sticker idea was not a good idea. So it just didn't work. So what was happening, and what is happening now, is that the trash removal, the green waste removal, it's working very well. As far as the customer goes, it's all going out the door, down the driveway, and it's going in a nice, clean truck. Goodbye. And it's all going to the same place, to the Covanta trash-to-energy facility. So it is being recycled into new energy, electricity and steam. We still have our green waste facility at 56th Street North, just west of Highway 169, and it is being used very, very well. That facility, the amount of green waste that was being brought up, that was grass clippings, leaves, et cetera, from homes, was a very, very, very small amount. So it never really had much of an effect upon the green waste facility's ability to put all that into the equipment to grind up into mulch, essentially. So we're seeing now still a very, very significant amount of debris being ground up into mulch, and it's being given away. And matter of fact, there's more being made than is actually being removed by people that want it, either to buy it or to be given a truckload.
My guest today is Mayor Dewey Bartlett. He's seeking a second term as Tulsa mayor. I want to ask you, what do you consider the biggest challenge? If you're reelected, what are you looking at as the biggest challenge for a second term?
Well, it's I'd say more of the same. We certainly want to keep going down the same road we've had some great success doing. The challenge is keeping people motivated and keeping people aware that we need to take advantage of good situations. Job creation is always difficult, but we've had good success in doing that. To keep that going, it does require a lot of people being on the same page. And we've been fortunate with the Chamber of Commerce, with the business community we have, that everybody understands the significance of that. And so we will continue that. The budget that we have at City Hall has been tight for the last few years. And although we are being much more efficient with how we're using that money, we're still essentially living off the same 3 cents of sales tax since 1985. That's been our main source of revenue since 1985 is the 3 cents that is collected off of retail sales. So it does continue to be difficult when we're looking at other services that are always being demanded of our community and that they deserve. So we need to be much more aware and continue to be in a position where we can keep analyzing better ways to use our dollars frugally but still provide good service. That, to me, is going to be a continuing difficulty for any mayor and any city council to make certain that capability of living within our means is still a real mantra.
Is it time to start thinking about something beyond the vagaries of sales tax as a main support mechanism for a city, or you feel like that's the way it's going to be?
I think that's the way it's going to be for quite a while. Certainly in Oklahoma, and if not in most of the country, the people just flat aren't wanting to raise taxes. They're fine with us living within what we presently have. And that's our responsibility now, is to live within what we are given. And we've been able to do that. And I'm convinced that we can even see better ways of doing that.
I want to ask you a question. You were talking about economic development. We've spent a lot of money on our downtown and on city improvements and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Has that made a difference?
Absolutely.
I mean, when you see even some of the private developments like down in the Brady District or the proposed gathering place, is this making a difference to the people you're going to as far as moving companies, relocating to Tulsa?
Without question. People now look to where they are considering moving, and they see what the community is really like because they know that the new employee reality is that employees, besides wanting to do good work and be employed, they're very, very, very interested in what the community has to offer. When we've had big events like the Bassmaster Classic, probably half the people that came to that event had not either been to Tulsa or many of them had not been into the BOK Arena ever and hadn't been in downtown Tulsa, even though they might live in the area. They hadn't seen downtown Tulsa. So for about a week, a lot of people got to experience that for the first time, and they were blown away, stunned. They thought, wow, this is here. This really is here in Tulsa. So those people, when they left and they go back home, they say, hey, Tulsa really is a neat town. They're doing a lot of stuff there. Besides having a great facility and nice restaurants and good bars and this and that, they've got a film and music commission that's amazing. They're doing great film. We went to this place called Circle Cinema, and we saw some really good stuff. We heard some music. Boy, have you heard this place called Kane's Ballroom? And they've got country western that I've never heard before. But they also have a whole bunch of other independent music makers that they're right there in Tulsa. And the history they have is incredible. So that's what they're talking about. And then when younger employees, when they hear that sort of thing, they think, hey, maybe I ought to go to Tulsa and check things out a little bit. And it does work. It really does. It's amazing. The Guthrie Green. There's more stuff going on there, and people are just amazed. And so we're amazed, and we live here. The people that don't live here, when they see that sort of thing, they really say, well, this place is really getting with the program.
Does that make a case for continued infrastructure development and private-public partnerships like we've seen over the last few years?
Absolutely. That's how it works. It really is. You cannot always rely upon a government to provide that visionary leadership in some areas.
But it has to step in at times.
Yes, they step in and they provide planning, they provide oversight, they provide funding of infrastructure that allows the private sector to then flourish. City Hall, we own and are part of a project that has a supercomputer. The only municipality I've ever heard of, I've ever been able to find out, that has a full-blown supercomputer in their building at their disposal. Now, there's others that are using that as well. But that's a huge, huge asset that we really haven't even scratched the surface on its usability. Everything from research to computer planning needs that require those big computers because there's so much information that has to be analyzed. Oil and gas companies, they have a tremendous amount of research needs, and they really require some big horsepower when it comes to computers. And that's available to them right now for a very, very minimal cost, comparatively speaking.
Well, there's a lot of issues out there that we're not going to get to today, and I guess we can go to your website to learn your position on a lot of these issues, but I do want to talk about one or two. One is the major infrastructure package, which will also be up for a vote. Mm-hmm. How important is this to the city's future? Do you think it's the right mix of street repair and street improvements versus that infrastructure we've been talking about?
We found early on, because of the large number of open meetings that we had, we went out to the community, and we had a series of approximately 50 meetings, public meetings, where we asked the public, what do you think? What do you want? What do you want better? This and that. And far and away, the number one answer was always, you've got to fix the streets. I was co-chairman of a task force 6-7 years ago that implemented the very first stab at finally fixing our streets. We had a lot, and we still do have a lot more need than we've been able to have money to fix them. But that first stab at it resulted in a positive vote by the public and provided $450 million of funding to rebuild and refurbish and do whatever's necessary to maintain our street system. And so to date, we've brought those projects in generally on time and certainly under budget. So we've done a very good job of managing that responsibility. In this particular package, there's about $700+ million that's set aside for streets, transportation issues. And we do need it because one good case is the South Yale Avenue between 81st and 91st Street. It goes up a hill, it's a two-lane road, comes off of a six-lane intersection, and that road is actually sliding down the hill right now. Hmm. And it's terrible in bad weather. It has to be rebuilt and replaced with at least a 4-to-6-lane street, and it'll be $35 million. But it has to be done because right now people are getting hurt. There have been fatalities on that street. We have no choice. We can't shut it down. So we have to be very aggressive in how we approach these things. But it, like all the other capital improvement needs, they need to be fixed. But if we defer them, then they won't just be fixed. They'll have to be totally rebuilt, and that gets much more expensive. So it's my responsibility as mayor to do whatever we can to have a much better program of maintaining our system as opposed to what we had been doing, which is simply allowing it to go to seed and then coming back and asking the public for a whole lot of money to rebuild it.
Is there a big issue out there for the future of the city that you might not even be able to tackle in the next 4 years, but it's a big issue that we as citizens need to be thinking about, we as a government need to be thinking about for the municipality? Is there a big issue out there that you think we should start thinking about? Maybe we don't even tackle it for one term or a decade, but what do you think that is?
I'll give you two, if that's fair.
Okay.
One kind of a gee whiz kind of a little deal. First one is, it's one that we've begun the process of, but I think it's important for us to complete it much, much sooner than later, and that is the completion of the Gilcrease Expressway. In northwest side of Tulsa, which includes bridging the Arkansas River. And the reason it's important is because the north, northwest, and west sides of Tulsa have really not participated economically with the balance of our city for a long time. They also have the real last large amounts of undeveloped lands or underdeveloped lands. And what is holding them back, in my view, is bridging the Arkansas River to provide immediate access for people and commerce to begin the process of developing those parts of our city.
And let's face it, that's also on the Tulsa footprint, which is your possible growth. You
Absolutely.
Can't grow to the southeast. You can't grow to the north because there are other municipalities.
Exactly. That's the only area of town that we really can grow out. Now, some will propose, let's grow up, literally.
Yeah.
And say, hooray, that's right, that's great. But we can't force people to do things that they don't want to do. We have a tendency in our community, in the Midwest part of our country, to grow out. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm certainly in that vein.
And you mean grow up, you mean get denser.
Get denser,
yeah.
Get more dense. I think that has its benefits, but also has its negatives.
And it's kind of happening, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Let the market make that decision, not government. When government dictates what to do, usually government screws up, and people don't want to be dictated to, especially in the Midwest part of our country.
Okay, we're running out of time. So
right.
You mentioned the Gilcrease Expressway, finishing that and going across the river and connecting to West Tulsa.
Yes.
Okay, what's the other one?
The gee whiz is, wouldn't it be interesting if we were able to buy the OETA television network?
Wow.
Wouldn't that be something? The state of Oklahoma, generally, they don't want to pay for it. They almost sold it at one point. But wouldn't that be interesting if the city of Tulsa had the ability to broadcast statewide and essentially worldwide by connecting to the Internet, but by having the broadcast license and able for us as a city to sell our city, not just in the city of Tulsa, but in the state of Oklahoma and the region of this country, buying the OETA network and having that ability to market ourselves and along with that.
Well, that doesn't sound like it's much like a public television station anymore. Or would you continue to make it a public television station?
That'd be for whoever is able to pull that trigger, that'd be their decision. But I would prefer to see it remain as a public television station. But obviously, the city of Tulsa would have a lot of say-so over its programming. They could then, they'd be in a position, our city would be in a position to market itself so much better and to sell ourselves constantly in all sorts of ways. But at the same time, we wouldn't be like TGov is now, where we're constantly seeing replays of a Board of Adjustment meeting. You know, I love the Board of Adjustment. But the public, unless they are very interested in a particular issue, they usually don't tune into the Board of Adjustment meetings.
Imagine that.
Yes. But if they were still able to tune into the
Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah. You know, National Geographic.
And then the city comes on with a council meeting.
Exactly. So the variety would be pretty interesting. But anyway, that's my gee whiz kind of idea.
All right. Well, we're out of time. I want to ask you one last question.
Sure.
You've had one term. Why should Tulsa voters return you to office on November 12th?
A couple reasons. One is we've had a very strong demonstrated success and track record in how I've been mayor of this city, and I brought us through some very, very difficult times. When you elect somebody to represent as a mayor, the voters expect them to be there through thick and thin and to have success and the difficult times, they go through them and they are successful. We've demonstrated that. We've demonstrated our ability to create jobs, to support economic development, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Almost every successful city in our country has had continuity of leadership in the political environment as well as in the business climate. And we haven't had that because when I became mayor, I was a fourth different mayor in 10 years. So there's no continuity of that service. By my reelection, I will now be able and we will be able to have that continuity of service of successful leadership that I have demonstrated and I would continue to focus on very successfully. So we look at cities like Oklahoma City. They've had that continuity of service. Same with Louisville, Indianapolis, Austin, Texas. I mean, the list is pretty strong. But they have continual leadership in the business community and in their political elected leaders.
All right. Well, good luck on November 12th. Mayor Bartlett, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Incumbent Mayor Dooley Bartlett speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He and former Mayor Kathy Taylor are the candidates to be the next Tulsa mayor on Election Day, November 12th. If you missed any of today's conversation or part of yesterday's with Kathy Taylor, you can listen on demand to both interviews at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. Again, if you missed any of our mayoral interviews or any of our interviews here at Studio Tulsa, they're available on demand anytime at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa and just search through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.